Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man.
Castle.
There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand, defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso in a tower by the river, Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
It's a new year, and so an old cliche. Who said in politics that if you want a friend, you get a dog? Steve Bannon was Donald Trump's dog, a dog with big, sharp, pointed teeth, and now he's turned. In his new book, Bannon unleashes hate on the Trumps, including Melania, and Trump slaps back at Sloppy Steve. It's a nauseous, vicious fight, but what I find truly delicious about it is this. The establishment media that loathes Trump, and let's not kid ourselves, it's a media that leans over to the left, now turns to hug in some fashion the anti-establishment Bannon, who calls the media the opposition party. And watching them on CNN the other night talking Bannon and Trump, I got the feeling that a few of the talking heads just wanted to roll over in bed and have a cigarette. Ouch. Should I have said that? Politics makes for strange bedfellows, but I just love the sincerity. It's not only politics around. In Illinois, we've got the political primaries on March 20th. State Rep. Jeannie Ives takes on Governor Bruce Rauner on the Republican side. And among the Democrats running for Governor, J.B. Pritzker and the Democratic machine duo of Rahm Emanuel and boss Mike Madigan are fighting off Chris Kennedy on J.B.'s behalf. And Kennedy is hoping to energize African-American voters, which is about the last thing Rahm, with Laquan McDonald on his back, wants to see happen. We're going to talk about all of this and more with a special guest, former Tribune reporter and now Ace Sun-Times columnist Dan Michalopoulos, a dear friend. But first, this is the Chicago Way podcast, Radio Free Chicago, behind the dark iron blue curtain. I'm John Cass. Yeah, that's me, the voice of a nightingale and mild-mannered columnist of the Tribune. And with me, as usual, co-host, partner, in the old school sense, and master pie baker, WGN radio producer, Jeff Carlin. Happy New Year, Jeff Carlin.
Happy New Year, John. What a year ahead we have.
What do you think, Jeff?
Well, I don't know. It's going to be interesting. With the local politics heating up, it'll be a distraction from the national chaos.
We will talk local politics with Dan, but what else is going to happen?
Well,
first of all, I got to tell everybody, Jeff gave me a great Christmas present, a fire scarf, and my very own Sox Man Bat Boy bobblehead doll. Oh, my God. Sox Man Grinder. It's like a guy, kind of looks like a movie critic of the Sun-Times, in a superhero Sox outfit. This is just so thoughtful.
I saw that and it had to go to you.
Does it make up for the fact that you didn't bring it?
Yes, I know. I promised you on a quiche this morning when we were taping. And unfortunately, and Christine's going to take the loss on this because she went out shopping and she forgot one key ingredient, which is cream. But to her defense, she can't do dairy, and so she just forgot.
Don't blame Christine. I had to pull over on Ogden Avenue. I was in the middle of Lawndale, pulled over on the side. And to text you back, watching a drug deal over by the little store on 12th Street. And I said, no worries, man, because there's no worries. No worries at all. Don't worry about the pie.
Well, I've got one coming.
Okay, there's a couple things I got to ask you about.
Yeah.
What's with this legalized pot thing?
So you're anti?
I'm asking you, my friend.
Asking me? Well, I think it's a great thing. I mean, we've legalized. It's the story goes back to the only reason the theory goes that pot was made a illegal substance was because Nixon was tired of hippies on his front lawn. I mean, that, and it was a shot at them. That was that's the rumor, that the story goes, that that's why we did it. We made it criminal. These are tax dollars that we should be getting. This is money. You know, people talk about the war on drugs, on drugs. We spend tons of money on the war on drugs.
So you want the government to be in the drug business?
No, I don't. I want the government to allow businessmen to be in the drug business.
But properly licensed?
Properly licensed.
The government, meaning they have to have political clout to get the deal.
Well, that's any. Right? It's with any business in this country.
To get the pot franchise to push all the other competitors out the window.
Well, that may be true, but it's still an open market would be great, but that's not
how
things
work.
What's
the virtue?
The virtue of it is that the dollars can go to that come in from that can be taken from a vice and used for a good, in education, be good for health.
All pot sales goes to education. I'll go for that.
Yeah, and education, you go all.
Not in the general fund,
nope,
like the lottery nonsense.
Nope.
One earmark.
Yep.
Education.
Two earmarks. Education and drug addiction awareness and campaigns.
We are going to be legalizing pot.
Right, exactly. So people,
and you're talking about recreational marijuana where we can smoke and then what? Drive on the expressway?
No, absolutely.
30 miles an hour?
No, it should be illegal just like drinking and driving is illegal. And they've even come up with saliva tests that are progressing and becoming more effective at judging and how much THC is in someone's system.
I agree with you 100%. We need pot. Actually, I think we need legalized pot all over the country, because in about 10 years, when it's illegal to drive your own car, there won't be a problem. And the robots that are taking over all the jobs, people will have to do something, and the only thing I can think they can do while we're sitting and taking our welfare checks from the government for the robots that took our jobs is to be stoned in the basement playing Call of Duty or some other video game.
Sure.
Otherwise, we're going to have a revolution, dude.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we have to drug Americans so we can keep them docile and placid and easily biddable, don't you think?
Well, I think it's a little dystopian, but yes, absolutely. Because, I mean, all this money is going into, it is in a black market. And
What about that?
People can get weed now. I mean, there's
so what will happen to those entrepreneurial weed sellers? Ironically, you know, a lot of dead bodies on the streets during that time while they're you know, carving out their territory.
Right.
What will happen to them?
I don't know.
In the Jeff Carlin plan? Everybody.
Well, I mean, they're already good at selling it, so maybe they can get jobs in the pot dispensary bodegas selling the wares because they know the product. I mean, and maybe they can get a law passed that there's no weed sold on Sundays like car dealers. And
but will they make, you know, thousands of dollars a day in cash.
They won't.
And what will they make then?
I don't know. They'll have an hourly wage. They'll have to work on that for themselves. I hate this idea that there's so much money going into these dirty pockets, and that money is going to dirty other causes because they're not.
You're right.
They're not spending it on education programs and. They're not investing it in schools.
Right, I understand. But, okay, so you take the cash out of the South and West Side economy. What happens, Jeff Carlin, in 10 days? Okay, you take the drug cash out of the West Side. Within 15, 20 days, what happens on the West Side?
I'm sure a turf war breaks out and it becomes pandemonium.
Over what? What are they going to? Are they going to fight for the right to work at McDonald's?
There are other illicit drugs that they spend their money on and they sling. But it's not. I don't know. That is one of the questions that there isn't a good answer for. But that's
bongs for everybody, Jeff.
Yeah, bongs for everybody.
All right, one more question. I know we have to go. Bongs for everybody, Jeff. And I got one more question here. Does Chicago need another 85 Bears documentary?
No. I love the 85 Bears. I mean,
heresy.
It's an amazing thing, and it's one of those stories that is so great. But I feel an 85 Bears documentary distracts from the fact that the current team is sucking up all of our tax dollars and doesn't do anything of value. They don't do anything of value. And then they raise the ticket prices every year.
One of my editors, Mark Jacobs, said, we need an 85 Bears documentary like we need, what's her name, with the headless Trump.
Oh, yeah, Kathy Griffin.
Kathy Griffin on New Year's.
Yeah.
On CNN, right, where she belongs.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd say that we need it. You know why?
Why?
Because people who are looking out at the football future in Chicago see a bleak, dystopian wasteland. And what we do is what people do who are depressed, a culture that's depressed, what we do is we look back to the time of glory, Homeric, Olympian glory.
Yeah.
Right? And this way we can, you know, feel better about ourselves.
Soothe ourselves, yes. I don't know. You know what we need? We need another football team.
The Cardinals?
Sure.
We did.
I know.
52nd and Morgan.
Yeah, bring back another team and force a little competition between two NFL franchises.
If I can't get two soccer franchises, you're not going to get two NFL franchises. So in a few minutes, we're going to have Dan Michalopoulos, right?
Good Dan, yeah. Glad to have Dan in the house. Haven't talked to him in a while, and, you know, he's one of the best out there.
We're a little worried about having him on, though, because, you know, Tribune sometimes.
Yeah, I know.
I'll have to sneak him in so no one sees him, you know, walking up here.
I hope he's got a disguise on.
Dan Michalopoulos from the Chicago Sun-Times joins Jeff Carlin and me. Dan, a dear friend, University of Missouri graduate. Then he came to the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, wrote magazine pieces. That's where I met him. And then later to the Chicago Tribune for a stellar career here, political writer and political muckraker, more like it, going after the aldermen on all their deals, and then went on to the Chicago News Cooperative, Jeff Carlin, which was a New York Times Chicago thing.
Yeah, we published the Chicago section of the New York Times,
right,
for a whole 28 or 30 months.
And then on to the Sun-Times. Chicago Sun-Times, the bright one.
Last 6 years, yeah.
You're the first Sun-Times reporter I think we've had on this show.
No? I think so, yeah.
Right?
I think that would be it.
Right? But
I'm
wanted
honored.
To, you know, I just thought, you know, I opened my arms to everyone, including my cumbado, Dan Michalopoulos.
Suddenly you're Mr. Big Ten.
I'm Big Ten now, man.
New year, new John.
Okay, disclosure, the boys, Spiro and Peter, baptized Danny's daughter, Juliana, the lovely, beautiful, and talented future ballerina or soccer player. We haven't decided what, right?
She has a lot of interests.
She has many interests. So, Danny, what do you make of the Kennedy thing, where Kennedy goes after Rahm, saying that Rahm is basically using various techniques of lack of service to drive African Americans out of the city, to make it a smaller city, something that Rich Daley once wanted to do years ago. He sat down with a reporter, and I know this reporter, the kid was wearing an Armani suit, it was in the days when he was skinny, and sat down with Rich Daley and heard all about how he was going to have a smaller city with a lot of wrought iron around it. And now Rahm. What do you make of the politics of this?
Look, there's no doubt that Chris Kennedy has failed to get traction in his campaign. There's no doubt, as you've pointed out, and as I think we've noticed for close to a year now, just by the associations, that J.B. Pritzker, his Democratic gubernatorial primary rival, has built, he's the endorsed candidate of the Democratic Party. I don't know that Rahm has endorsed him publicly yet, because I don't think it would help him very much.
No, but Michael Sachs is all over it.
Yeah.
Everybody else in the Rahm sphere, just like all the Madigan guys.
Well, Madigan and the Democratic Party now have officially endorsed him. The Cook County and the state Democratic Party really have officially endorsed him. But Chris Kennedy has had trouble finding a niche here. I think there are some Daily people, you know, old Daily people that still want Chris Kennedy.
Billy.
Yeah. But at the same time, he hasn't gained traction. He hasn't had a very, very well-organized campaign or very well-funded campaign. He's up against a billionaire with another, probably almost billionaire in Rauner waiting in the wings if he does get the Democratic nomination. It's a big uphill climb for Chris Kennedy. So this is a big appeal to what is happening in a lot of Democratic primaries. I mean, we saw it in the mayoral race here in 2015. You go to the left.
I'm not of the, I want to newsflash to everybody out there. I'm not of the left, but I find his argument refreshingly candid. Maybe you could do that when you're running second against all that big money. But the last thing that Rahm wants is the African-American community to be energized now. He wants them sleep. He wants to trot out some fuzzy sweaters and pictures with Obama. You know, Rahm and Michelle having lunch or something. Rahm and Obama talking about great things. He doesn't want a discussion about how 200,000, I believe, African-Americans have left this city in the last 10 years, most of whom are covered by, you know, those are the people that are counted by the census, not really the real poor. And they've gone to Texas and Georgia, Atlanta.
They've gone to the south suburbs. They've gone to Indiana. There's middle-class people of other races that have left the city, too. I don't know that it's a strategic plan, as Chris Kennedy said, but that's what's happened over the last, 20, 25 years. This is a new American city, that Rich Daley, like you said, was helping to mold.
Like at Paris. One time.
Yeah, I mean, instead of having the inner city being the poor and the suburbs, all the money and the jobs migrating to the suburbs, you have a center in Paris. Anybody who's just been on the train from the airport to downtown Paris sees that you go through this ring of kind of scary-looking suburbs, and then you get to the center, and it's the Paris of, the movies and the City of Light, the Arc de Triomphe, the museums, probably an Armani outlet. I don't know where you got your suit, but I'm guessing it wasn't.
Did I say it was me? Yeah.
Place de la Concorde.
Me and Basti Schweinsteiger, yeah. Wearing two Europeans in blazers, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think that's inevitably what's happened in this city, is that you've seen a lot of the middle class, black as well as Hispanic, Asian, and white, leaving the city. A lot of money concentrated in the center. A lot of areas that have gone from either being minority, majority, to all white, or just almost depopulated in some areas. Like, take the West Loop, where the Sun-Times recently moved. That's an area that I think had a huge influx of white, wealthy residents, as did the South Loop.
Peter Francis Geraci in the dog issue. Isn't he out there?
I'm not sure on that. But
no, I'm just, right. There are many big, what Rahm would like is everyone making $300,000 and causing him no problems. But back to the politics of it, I think that it's a legitimate issue. And it's interesting to see how it's being covered. The Tribune wrote a story. Rick Pearson and those guys did a story. Sun-Times did a story. But I haven't seen either editorial denouncements. Have I missed? Have I missed an editorial denouncement from the Sun-Times about
there was
how dare you, Kennedy?
Yesterday by one of my colleagues. I was off, but there was a column by another one of my colleagues we're talking about Mark Brown, and I think I don't want to speak for him, but his take, as I understood it, was he didn't think there was a strategic plan, that it's a conspiracy theory. Although, you know, this is really what we've seen happen in the city over the last couple decades. And so you have to wonder, is this just happening randomly, or is there some sort of not-so-invisible hand that is, when you see the pattern of investment and the policies that have been put in place, wasn't it clear that that was the intent of those policies and that the goal that was accomplished, or what resulted, was the goal that they wanted to accomplish?
Do you believe in accidents and policy?
Not
Jeff
at all.
Carlin?
I don't. But you and I talked about this a little yesterday when we were kind of prepping for taping this. The Kennedy thing seems for it seems like a forced play. It seems like coming out and doing this, you know, it's someone, you know, this idea popped up in discussion with his team and like, hey, this is something we can kind of seek and sink into, and it kind of falls in line with the whole property tax assessment concept, and it's and it fits his narrative. But it's not a fight that I don't think he's, if he wasn't running, he wouldn't be fighting for this cause. And I don't think I think it's it seems too transparent. I mean, I don't
there's
think
there's a
anybody,
lack of sincerity. I think,
yeah,
in some,
I
in some sense. I mean, what has he been doing? He's been living here. He's been a corporate citizen,
right?
But when you look at the three towers that he's building at Wolf Point, that were beginning to obscure the view that I once had at the old Sun-Times offices until recently, you're talking about some of the most valuable property in the city. You're talking about an area that's really boomed in just the last few years. It was kind of a quiet corner of downtown. And that's Chris Kennedy and what he's doing. Now we look at Chris Kennedy and what he's saying. Legitimate or not, I think Jeff has a good point. Whether he gets traction and whether he is able to use this to his advantage before the primary, I think depends on the believability of the messenger as well as the message.
Well, that's a way to minimize, both of you who are my dear friends, are minimizing this guy and kicking him to the margins, where I would suggest the opposite, respectfully. That campaigns, to me, are important because people bring up ideas that weren't otherwise discussed. How those are covered or ignored by the institutional media, which is often, let's say, not often, always the establishment voice in many respects, tells me a lot about a city and its culture. So if I don't see, when Kennedy was going after Dan shaking his head. I love this.
How is this like Dan and me having coffee at Nelly's? Part of the establishment?
No, of course he is part of the establishment.
They haven't blessed his career plan now to become governor, which he's finally put into play after many false starts.
Yes, he has finally. I'm not defending his. I'm not defending Chris Kennedy the person. I like when campaigns bring up ideas that aren't otherwise
absolutely
discussed. And it's a legit, to me, it's a legitimate idea.
Absolutely.
The whole thing that with Kennedy saying, talking about the lack when the city undervalues or doesn't fight undervalued assessments of huge parcels, leaving a lot of money on the table, just because, why? Because those parcels are backed by Ed Burke and Mike Madigan's law offices. Who pays the freight for millions upon millions of dollars in each parcel that is undervalued? You know who does? Everybody listening to this podcast. So things like that interest me.
His argument is great. And even the assessment thing. I mean, then you saw a bunch of pieces in Sun-Times and the Tribune jumping onto this.
Barrios.
Going after this. And it forced Barrios to come out and say, hey, okay, we do it this certain way. Trust us. There's no hijinks going on. But Kennedy's not going to. There's no inroad here. I mean, good for him being the champion of this. The underwhelmed. But he's not going to make any headway here in a primary against J.B. Pritzker with this, especially with the rest of the state. I mean, no one's going to care about this.
It's funny, Dan and myself and others have been writing about Barrios for quite some time, but all of a sudden he gets hot and everyone else jumps on, and then you see the beating. That's when I start feeling kind of not sorry for Barrios, but Joe Barrios is not a phony about what he does. He's a patron, right? Dan's
he reminds us of our old friend Bill Beavers. You know,
yeah,
pretty transparent,
right,
about what he is and what he's trying to do.
Hiring his kids.
Yeah, I mean, he's been doing this for many years. He's fought for the right to nepotism. He's compared himself to JFK hiring RFK.
Yeah,
I think we're finally waking up to him after so many years. Yeah, there's something interesting about that. To go back to your point, though, about the message that Chris Kennedy is putting out there and the strategic gentrification hypothesis, let's call it.
Okay.
I don't want to call it a conspiracy theory because, like I said, I think that's effectively what's happened, whether it was designed explicitly or not, and by whom it might have been designed. I do think, though, that when you talk about this message being out there, I think it has been out there before. You know, the Tale of Two Cities campaign that Chuy Garcia ran in 2015, which I know that you understood viscerally, and I think a lot of voters did. But, you know, Chuy in many ways might have been a better messenger for that than Chris Kennedy, and yet he lost the election against $30 million. But
he lost the election because black voters, in part because of that, and in part because things that we often don't want to talk about, Jeff Carlin, Dan, which is black voters didn't go for Latino. Okay? I mean, there's like that division, too. No?
I'd be interested to see what Chuy thought about that. He certainly tried to make his appeal to black voters early on. I remember a profile piece in the Chicago Reader about how Chuy always liked, you know, music from black musicians. And
he's a jazz man.
Yeah, you know, again, it's really baffling to me. Although the black community has shrunk, as we all know, officially, and perhaps more so if we had the real accurate numbers, there's really nobody stepping up from that community to run against a Rahm, and nobody who, what we see a lot of times is something like Obama, you know, becomes a phenomenon. And I do think he ran against the machine in 2004. I think the machine and Daley totally wanted Dan Hines.
They wanted him in the primary, yeah.
Well, in the end, somebody like that emerges and they get shipped up and out. But and now Chewy's getting shipped out, too.
But Axelrod was with them.
Axelrod was with Obama.
Right. Rich Daley's mouthpiece.
True, he was working for Rich at that time.
It's funny how, like, it's like politics is a game of friends, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know? Okay, so we're in this season now where we're going to have the primary, and I'd be remiss if I didn't ask Dan, what do you expect on your email, on your phone, in the days leading up to the March 20 primary? We're in the time of the drops, the time of the guy calling you saying, I know about this, this, and this about this other candidate, and it's really juicy, but they don't have really hard information, or they do. Is this the time when things start coming up under the transom, or we don't even have transoms
anymore? Nah, yeah.
Well, people drop a dime? It costs more to call than a dime.
There's Apple researchers that are out there and various ways that they try to get it back to us, all of us.
Mm-hmm.
Some of us they like to call, you know, and I welcome them.
I do too. But they have to know that they also, that the, what the people that really like the Apple people, the drop, the people that are going to drop, what they want is a hit piece on their opponent without any question about their own motives, right?
Well, I don't care where it's coming from, honestly. I mean, I don't care what the motives are, or there's always an axe to grind. I think in the end, what matters is if it's accurate or not.
Mm-hmm.
It's our job to figure that out, if it's accurate and it's significant. And where it's coming from, you know, we have to do our due diligence, too. There are fewer of us. We can't just rely on Apple researchers. We should be doing our own due diligence.
And you do, Dan.
Well, I'll tell you, when I profiled Chuy in the year 2015, I thought I knew him pretty well. I think I kind of knew his history, although he'd been out of politics, you know, per se, for quite a while. But, you know, what you got to do is take advantage of the resources that you have, not just your sources and not just the Apple research or people who are trying to help the person's opponent. You got to look at LexisNexis. I know this is not as interesting as the sort of motivations and intrigue of dropping dimes, but
right.
That's really what we do and where we get some stories that I think end up being significant that might look like Oppo research, but we have to do our own due diligence. And I think some of the reporters, as few as they are relative to how many there were in the past, I think are doing Oppo research, so to speak, or due diligence on the candidates that in many cases is better than the Oppo researchers.
Mm-hmm.
I think your motivations are important. I mean, if you're an Oppo researcher, you're just looking to throw things on the wall, right? Not to denigrate what they do, but sometimes they try to sell you stuff that they're trying to, you know, oversell.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we have to look at it with a great skepticism, as we do any tip coming from anybody for any reason.
Do you have any rules on that, guys? The last, for many years, I've operated under the last few days of a campaign. Don't tell me a story about pedophilia or communist or drug dealing or something. I mean, like the kind of off-the-wall crazy stuff that you get at the end of a campaign. Is suspect, and of course you have to check everything. But some of it, I don't know, maybe it's me. I don't like to, after the long campaign, those last few days, I'm not into another hit.
No, I think...
Is that wrong of me?
I think you got to take it when it comes,
mm-hmm.
Regardless of whether it's close to the election. Of course, it doesn't mean that it's true. Of course, it doesn't mean it's significant and you have to run it. But, yeah, I think things come out later on. You know, this Roy Moore stuff that you're referring to with the pedophilia.
Oh, no, I was thinking of other stuff, but yeah.
Oh, I don't know.
I wasn't even thinking of Roy Moore. I'm thinking of, like, Alderman so-and-so or Alderman or Committeeman X or YZ. Not to use Y.
No, I was thinking of Roy Moore. I mean, I think there's a situation where maybe some of the local media, you know, didn't want to deal with things that they had heard. And then you get a national reporter who comes in, who I think she was from Alabama, the reporter, what was her name, Stephanie McCracken?
I think that's right, yeah.
But the Washington Post, mm-hmm. who broke that story and broke a number of those stories. And yeah, I think the reasons why things come out when they come out, part of it is, yes, the pressure of the campaign and the looming election and people trying to throw dirt. But part of it is just the kind of news ecosystem that exists. As you've talked about even in this segment here, the way that the local media reacts to things sometimes might obscure important mm-hmm. issues.
We would see that all the time nationally. When Daily was covered nationally, it would drive me insane. I think Dan sometimes too.
Oh, and he played it to the hilt. I mean, he loved to bring reporters from the Financial Times or German television, and you know, he'd say, "Don't listen to these reporters. You know, they all live in the suburbs.
Oh yeah,
because they're middle class." Them.
Right. Because they don't have enough money to send their kids to Latin school, Rich.
Yeah.
Right. That's why.
Okay? Or four different schools.
Right.
Well, how do you handle on the radio that last minute? You're the producer of one of the most widely listened to afternoon drive time shows, the Rokon show with Anna Devolantis. Ding.
Ding.
And
another Greek.
Right, another Greek. Yeah, there's... Oh.
We're overrepresented in the local media.
There's too many of us, Jeff Carlin?
No.
Okay. But,
you know, we get, and a lot of the stuff that comes to us, it comes to us in the form of like a phone call during a show and say, hey, you guys have to look this up. So then.
Yeah, how do you deal with even putting somebody on the air?
Well, that's the thing is you just can't do it. Click. You know, I appreciate it. You take some notes on it and then. Try to dig down that rabbit hole.
But can't you have the time when you're producing
right,
a show?
You do, and I try. And those are usually a little different. I mean, those are citizens who are, you know, they read something somewhere. They saw something somewhere. And especially in the age of internet, Facebook news, people, you know, anything they see, they think is, you know, honest truth.
Even if they don't remember where they saw
it. Right, exactly. Yeah. I saw this online, or I saw, you know, a friend of mine shared this with me, and it wasn't a friend of them sharing it in an, you know, manila envelope sliding under their door. It was, you know, a clickbait. So then if finding, you know, where they found that, and that's usually what I do because it's such a quick turnaround, a lot of that stuff, is diving down and saying, oh, I found the page, I found the Facebook
Google
link.
Google Facebook.
Yeah, yeah, and I have to dig up and find out where they found that from or where it started from. And then you see, oh, well, this is some random blogger that doesn't even have, you know, there's no background in news, but they just have agenda. And
welcome to the new age. Everybody's a columnist.
Yeah. And everybody. It's terrifying, yeah. the stuff that comes out of it now.
Everybody. All right. So what's going to happen in the primary, Dan Michalopoulos? I know you're not in the prediction business, but looking forward, how do you see Republicans and Democrats out of this?
I think Rauner is tough to beat, actually. I really do. I just think for the money, if for no other reason, I think he becomes tough to beat. At the same time, it's not easy for him either, given that he's looks like he's going to get primaried from the right. For me, IPI, you know, Illinois Policy Institute, has kind of been sort of the Bannon of his administration.
I wouldn't go that far.
I don't know, man. They were in there. They were deep in there for a short while.
It's a conservative group, clearly, and they're but I would not apply the Bannon word.
I don't think that they get along anymore.
Rauner, no.
No, yeah.
He's now Governor Sanctuary City, Governor Abortion
Funding.
Abortion, taxpayer funded abortion. Not even Pat Quinn and Mike Madigan would do that. But he did it. How's that gonna affect him?
I think it does affect him. I think he didn't win by all that much. He won by more than anybody thought. It was 5% against Pat Quinn. Against a Pat Quinn who is fairly hapless governor, to say the least. And I don't even want to start talking about his AG run. But when you talk about Rauner, you're looking at a guy who, when he comes back to the people who voted for him and who supported him, in many cases,
it's
not
tough.
Just the far right or the moderate conservatives, anybody, what did you accomplish?
Yeah,
so
and he's got to run two races essentially. I mean, he's got to run a race against Jeannie Ives downstate and, you know, central downstate outside of
the suburbs,
right? But even in exactly. But he's got to run that saying, "Hey, I'm still conservative. You know, these things may have happened, but I didn't have a choice. You know, it was one of those things that I was in a corner and I had to get something, and I got something. And look at school funding. Like I tried, you know, that he's going to hang on to those, but." Then he's got to come up here in Chicago and run the I'm Not Madigan campaign, which we've seen already. If you've been on the internet since January 1st.
Madigan. I agree with him, but I was again. I realized Madigan was a problem, not because of his personality or his party, just because of the one party, the complete control
of it. But
for a long time.
Rauner's, if he can get a larger group of voters in Cook County and the metro area here, the downstate stuff won't matter. And that's where he's going to have the toughest time because he's going to run against people who are truly conservative, who haven't heard him say the word Trump at all and
Sanctuary
are mad
City,
about him.
Saying Sanctuary City hurts. Abortion hurts.
It does.
It's his base.
But it doesn't hurt as much in Cook County as it does downstate.
He's not running for Cook County governor.
No, but there are more votes up here.
What about on the other side? I'm waiting for the plumber. This is a standard feature on the Chicago Way podcast. I'm waiting for the plumber butt crack commercial. I hope it's
animated,
animated because I don't want to see live action of the plumbers and J.B. Pritzker pulling the toilets out of the house, the mansion he bought, to make it uninhabitable so his mansion would be...
Next door mansion.
Next door mansion would get a tax break of $237,000, which, you know, JB really needed.
Right.
Who's going to do that commercial, and will we ever see it?
Well, you'd hope that Kennedy would have the wherewithal to do that. I think that was the single biggest hit that JB has taken of all the,
two.
Well, what do you think?
And his sucking up to Rod Blagojevich and ripping his sister.
Yeah.
But the Sun-Times did one, Tribune did the other.
Yeah, right? Well, maybe I'm biased, but I think that the House one is more damaging to him than the Blagojevich one. I mean, Blagojevich was the governor back then. Mm-hmm. He talked to the governor. I don't know. Maybe Blagojevich is still toxic. I think there's an unusual amount of sympathy for Blagojevich.
There's an empathy that's been growing. I mean, a lot of people you talk to now and you hear the stories, they see the gray photos of his hair, and they're like, oh, you know, he's been in a long time, and maybe he got in for something. Look,
you don't threaten the president of the United States enjoy of long retirement.
No, absolutely. Okay. But I think the people who are going to be voting don't care. They don't give as much take on that.
Yeah, I don't have any sympathy for him. I don't know if there's any sympathy in this room for him, if I had to guess. But I think there is some around the state. Yes. I hear it.
You hear it in the media lately.
You hear it, quite a bit in the media.
In private people, I mean, every time we have friends talk about it, you know, people, they think, they hear it, and they're like, oh, they hear Patty talk about, you know, the daughters growing up, and they hear, you know, the stories of what he did or didn't do and not getting money. And then you hear, you know, somebody else come out, you know, a Jackson come out and say, oh, I pocketed a bunch of cash. Here's a couple months.
Divorce is inevitable.
Right, exactly. And people, so then they compare the two, and they're like, wow, look at what he got, and look what he's doing, 13 years, and he didn't even get any money. And
okay, well, so he's still in the can, but he's going to be in the can while we have a mayoral election. So who's going to run for mayor, Jeff Garlin?
Well, it looks like Gary McCarthy's revving up pretty hard.
I don't think he's going to run.
No?
I really don't.
Why?
How do you run as basically a Trumper candidate in the city of Chicago? Really? Yeah. I mean, okay, the cops who now say they like Gary McCarthy, 10,000 of them, they hated his guts, but let's say that they're for him in Mount Greenwood and in Edison Park. I don't think Gary McCarthy
runs. Those are two neighborhoods
runs.
The reader doesn't like, I've noticed.
Yeah, I saw that too.
But anyway.
I don't think that Mr. Stop and Frisk from the Bronx is a guy for Chicago. You know, a lot of people say, oh, well, Rahm isn't an authentic Chicagoan because he grew up in the North Shore.
Why? Because they grew up in the suburbs and ride a bike up and down
Milwaukee Avenue
and they wear cardigans.
Yeah.
Give me a break.
Look, I mean, if Rahm isn't a Chicagoan, what is Gary McCarthy, you know?
I think that Gary McCarthy running, Rahm would love that because it would drive black voters to him.
Yeah.
You know, but, and I don't see any other aldermen. The untold story, I think one of the best stories, although you've done many, Dan, is the Rahm's dealing with the black political elite, using Mike Sachs' money, budget deals, perks, this and that, keeping everything under the radar.
There are a number of African-American aldermen that say that you think they're in the Progressive Caucus. Or I don't see any of them running. None of them are making any noise about running. You know, possibly with a decline in the African-American population, that makes it obviously less likely that someone would emerge. But you could still imagine someone emerging. It's just not happening.
No, it's not.
Yeah, I don't see anybody. I mean, there's no Chewy. Chewy's not going to run. So
no, Chewy's not running. And Louis, I fully anticipate him with Juan Ochoa putting out business cards about their real estate empire.
I don't see him running for president.
Who, Louis?
Seems
so. What happens with our business now? Okay, we're moving. You know, you spent how many years here, Dan?
10 years and a day. Yeah.
10 years and a day at the Chicago Tribune. What do you make of the? We're moving out. You know, you guys have moved. You've moved a few times. We're moving out of this building this year. You know that I'm heartbroken about it.
Yes, we talked about.
We talked about that off the air. What does it mean when the newspaper leaves the Tribune Tower?
Wow. Well, having left of my own volition once, right. I can tell you it's an amazing building to work in. As you know, there are reminders of what our role is or what our role should be as you walk in and out of work. And I think it's going to affect a lot of people viscerally and deeply when they don't work in the building anymore. But I think, as I told you off the air, John, you know, in the end, what we do, we can't be distracted when we're dealing with these things by the architecture around us or by the view out the window, which we had a tremendous view until we moved, as I said. Chris Kennedy was starting to block it, but we had a tremendous view.
I never had an office with a view. I'm always in the darkness. In the cave.
I think there's some good of that, but once in a while I like to look out at the boats on the Chicago River, especially in the summer, and say, wow, I picked the wrong industry to go into. But no, seriously, I think that leaving this building for the Tribune or for the Sun-Times moving out of downtown, we are dedicated, those of us who still work in this industry, to keep doing what we're doing. That's just not a pep talk. That's truly something that I would quit if I didn't believe that. But at the same time, you can't help but think, when you look at the movement of these offices out of cathedrals of the industry or away from downtown a little bit, in our case, you start feeling that maybe you're no longer central to the functioning of the city. Who are all these people with all these new jobs that are buying all these condos and patronizing Gibson's Italia,
right?
And
as opposed to Italy, right?
Yeah, or as opposed to the places that reporters can go to.
Right.
That's the really ironic thing about the movement that Trump tapped into, is like the media are elites. Yeah, maybe we are elites compared to, you know, Sheboygan, where I was at the water park the last few days. But are we really elites compared to what's going on in this economy and in this society anymore? I certainly don't feel that when, you know, our offices are being pushed out of their traditional homes and out of downtown, and downtown is building up into this, you know, place that has more jobs than, you know, than it's ever had. It's you just have a gut feeling like an era has ended, you know?
The work is still the work.
Right.
And it's the only thing that it's what keeps me going is the it's not really like the Tribune Tower or even my, you know, like I'm in the paper. It's that moment when you're writing at your desk, Danny. You're writing wherever you're writing, right? At your laptop, at home, on your at your desk at work, in a coffee shop, or Dan's secret place on Milwaukee Avenue, where you can have a frappe once in a while.
Don't give it away.
I can't give it away. And all that, that thing that clicks is what's great about it.
I think to me when it really clicks is when you do start getting feedback from the readers, and you know that people saw that story staring out of the newspaper boxes around the city, or people saw it online more likely in this day and age, and you get more tips.
Yeah.
And you get somebody calling you and saying, that was good, but you know what you need to look at is her or him and this deal or that deal. And that's, to me, as long as that feedback loop is still there, as long as that impact is still there, as long as inspector generals or SEC investigators or the U.S. Attorney's Office and the FBI see that story, that investigative story, and they something comes of it, ultimately. You know, cough, Forrest Claypool. not to plug our own stories, but, you know, you still have an impact in the lives of the people, and your friends are talking about those stories, or people that you don't know tell you about the story. They don't realize that you wrote it.
Right.
Yeah, that's awesome when that happens.
That's for me, as long as that's still alive, doesn't matter what building I'm, you know, domiciled in as a professional.
Can't let you go without asking you the most important question. What's the fire going to do this year?
You know, and can I get quiet?
And can I get Ken Griffin to buy a soccer team?
Yeah, I know you still feel that Andrew Hauptmann should sell the team, right? Despite the last season,
which I don't know.
Improvement, really.
I like the fact what he's doing, and I like Nelson Rodriguez. But I also think if Griffin bought another team, we'd have competition. That's what I love to see, just like Tribune sometimes. You know what I mean?
I know you're excited about this potential stadium in the Amazon area in Clybourne.
A lot of craft beers, like Maplewood Brewery.
That would be an ideal location for a soccer stadium, but I'll remind you, the Fire has a long-term lease the village of Bridgeview. I think it's another 19 years or something. Jeez. What are we, 11, 12 years into a 30-year lease? It's pretty rock solid. You can't even put an MLS team in the Chicago market other than that team, and I don't think the market could really handle two teams anyway. But the location of that potential stadium off of Clybourne, near Northwest Side, that's, of course, ideal. But you know, that's what they should have done. Honestly, I think they should have put a soccer stadium where the DePaul Arena is. That would not have been as good a location.
You mean the arena they didn't have to build?
Yeah.
For $100 million?
I don't know why they built it.
Well, you know why they built it. because
DePaul.
No, because guys who know guys had that Finkelsteel they wanted to develop because they drew a map that linked Alderman Hopkins with a thin strip of it's like you could spit across the strip, and it runs for I don't know how long to connect him to that area. He's a Johnny Daly guy. And they protect. And then instead of building the DePaul basketball stadium there where it should have been, right, so walking distance for the kids, Rahm goes, no, you know what? I got a better idea. I'm going to find $100 million and build a stadium that no one's going to go to.
Is anyone going to it? Down what? In the South Loop there? I mean, is anybody?
You mean the McCormick Place Stadium?
The Wintrust, yeah.
I don't know.
Arena. Yeah, I mean, I saw the first open game, you know, coverage of it, and the stadium was full, but that's about it. I haven't seen anything else.
Could DePaul kids get there?
How? I mean, how? They take the red line down and then walk over?
Right.
They're not going to do that.
And that, not going to happen.
That would have been a good site for a soccer stadium. Rich Daly didn't like soccer. That's the reality. To bring it back to John's favorite guy in my old
Too bad Chinese investors didn't like, maybe the ones he knew didn't like soccer. Others do. Yeah. And those, you know how that goes.
Those visas for people that invest $1-2 million each.
B1.
You know what Rich always believed? It's Chinatown, Jake. You know what I'm saying? It's Chinatown. Dan Michalopoulos, Jeff Carlin, John Cass, your mild-mannered columnist, syndicated but voted apparently the worst columnist in the city of Chicago's history. Thanks for another edition of the Chicago Way, and we'll talk to you soon. Bye.